Hello, and you are listening to La Cosa Nostra. I'm Edward.
I'm Noah.
And today we are covering 1988's Who Framed Roger Rabbit, directed by Robert Zemeckis, starring Bob Hoskins, Charles Fleischer, and Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, so, it came out in 1988. When was the first time maybe you heard of this movie or...
So I've known it's been around for a very long time. It's one of those classic, you know, like, celebrates Hollywood movies. I never really got around to watching it because I didn't really understand, like, what it was, whether it was, like, a kid's movie or whether it was an adult's movie, because I'd seen, like, some of the character designs and some of them are quite risque designs.
Yeah.
I've only watched it, like, a day before we've done this, per your recommendation. And you?
I can't even remember the first time I watched this. It was such a long time ago. And I'm not sure if I was the right age to watch this. But because I've always been a fan of the classic cartoons of like the 1940s and 50s, it was like, huh, wow, there's this whole movie about it. It's a live action and animation. And you don't get a lot of hand-drawn live action and animated films. This movie was like, wow, this is really interesting. Let me watch it. And I've watched it like I don't know how many times now, but it's, yeah. So what did you think of the film?
It's weird. I think it's the first thing I'd say. It's very odd. I think in terms of how it's managed, it's really well done with the toons and the humans interacting.
Yes.
Within the human, when most of the world is live action and there's just the toons, sometimes it feels like, you know, they've that perfect almost.
Yeah.
As soon as you get those scenes where it's a human in toon world, it's a bit badly managed. You can tell
it's a little old. But the thing was with this movie, like when they first made it, I remember like that I heard a story of how they had a screen test and they showed it to the Disney executives and they genuinely thought it was a man in a rabbit suit.
Huh.
That's how good it looked.
Yeah,
it
looks really good.
I know. And like the budget isn't even that big.
No.
70 million. I mean, this is Disney in 1988. So budget-wise, this is unbelievably large. This was unbelievably large. I didn't think this is the same kind of budget as like Last Crusade, like Raiders of the Lost Ark. So this was like a really big investment for them to do. Yeah. And I don't think they would have done it without like having people like Steven Spielberg part of it as well. And Robert Zemeckis, who had just come off, he's like, because they didn't originally want Robert Zemeckis to do it, but then he made Romancing the Stone and then Back to the Future. And then it was like, yeah. And it's based on a book.
It's based on a book called Who Censored Roger Rabbit. And what I was saying is this film is obviously it's built to have jokes for adults, but it being made by Disney and having Warner Bros. And all of these iconic child characters, they tried to keep it PG enough. The book itself, from what I've heard,
it's not a PG.
It's a kid. It's like a full-on adult's book that makes fun of the cartoons.
They're actually comic characters in the...
Yeah, comic characters. It's kind of everything mixed into one. And they've taken that basic idea of like a noir thriller, which was really popular at the time, but mixed with these like childhood characters.
Yeah, and it's...
But they've diluted it, I think.
Yeah.
And it has that kind of craziness that I think if it was more adult would like... wouldn't feel so weird, but it being a kids movie and then having
but like the thing was with this movie, it was like for the time it was already pushing it, because this is the 1980s and this is before like the kind of animation renaissance of the 90s, and like back then all animation was like Saturday morning like cartoons. It was like Scooby-Doo and like you know, Flintstones, stuff like that. And then you had like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So like to have this movie that's pushing, no, only one other animated film has a PG, and that's The Black Cauldron, which came out in 1985.
Yeah.
So for this movie to have a PG, it was already kind of pushing it. But I completely understand when you say, like, it doesn't go further. It could have gone further.
It feels like it should have gone a bit further in order to, like, really, maximize its ability, I think. Because there are these really kind of clearly adult joke kind of characters, like... Jessica Rabbit and like her job, and then the like the patty cake jokes and things like that.
I know, I never understood the patty cake joke until like probably it took me like until 2 years ago. I was like, oh, okay. And I was watching it with my younger sister once, and she was like, what does patty cake mean? I was like, let's just not get into that. It's quite it's quite something. But like the thing with this movie, it was originally supposed to be released by Walt Disney Pictures, like under their label. Then they saw how like risque it was, and then they released it under the Touchstone label, which that was the label that you had films like Dead Poets Society and Down and Out in Las Vegas.
I was going to say, which we've covered before.
This movie did like really well. Like, it was the second highest grossing movie of 1988 behind Rain Man.
Rain Man is brilliant. We need to cover that at some point. Yeah. Rain Man is brilliant.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much that made, but like...
quite a lot, this, I'd imagine. I mean, it's Tom Cruise pulling in.
Yeah.
But this has Christopher Lloyd, who...
he was like
must
Zemeckis.
Be friends with Zemeckis.
Yeah, Zemeckis, I go back and forth on Zemeckis. Yeah. On the one hand, he's made some of the greatest films. He made Back to the Future, Forrest Gump, Castaway. There are some really, really good films.
And then he makes something
he
like
made
him.
The, he makes the Polar Express for like...
No, Polar Express, I don't think is that big of a problem. But he'll make something like his new movie Here or Flight or like...
Yeah, it was just after the Polar Express, he was like, motion capture is the way. And it's like he's always been like the experimental director with like Forrest Gump, pulling Tom Hanks into all these older situations, and having like Back to the Future Part 2, where like you have the same actors in the same space at the exact same time. He'd always been this kind of like experimental guy, but post Polar Express, I don't even know what he's been doing. I can't even see one good film that he's made since Polar Express.
Yeah,
A Christmas Carol is all right.
Oh, he did Pinocchio. Yeah. Pinocchio is not too bad.
Okay, Pinocchio is god awful. I can't believe he made that. I didn't know he was that bad. I haven't seen The Witches. Apparently, it's not great.
The Witches is all right. So you've got a kind of interesting director.
Yeah, this was back when like he personally, I think he could have done no wrong. Like this was between Back to the Future and Back to the Future Part 2, and like he made some really good films. I didn't really happen. The score of this movie
is pretty good.
It's by Alan Silvestri, who does a lot of great stuff. He did, Back to the Future, Forrest Gump. He did all of Zemeckis. I'm pretty sure all of Zemeckis' films. And like, it has a completely incredible score. And it is just really, really good. It is really something.
Should we have a little chat about plot?
Yeah,
in this
plot
film?
Wise.
This
is the thing that you were saying.
It's
when, like,
weird.
As I a think, child, I'm not understanding the plot.
No, I think...
yeah.
As a kid, you're not going to understand the plot. And I think, in a sense, if you're going to make that kind of plot, you should go the whole way.
Yes.
Especially with, like... it's funny that Doom wants to make a freeway, and then at the time, freeways were a huge thing. And like,
no, they weren't. This is set in 1947, so
yeah, but
and like they even talk about how cable cars were like the way people got around.
The time you're watching the movie in the 80s, freeways are like a huge part of life, and motels are really glitzy and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like it's all
so
very new,
like...
and so they're making fun of like society. And I think you could have made that a whole lot more funny and more realistic.
Yeah, but like, it's the kind of thing that I just don't think. It's quite hard because like, they know children are gonna watch it as well. Like, and it's the kind of thing where it's like, how? Because it's a really good plot, but it's like,
it's
okay,
kind of
children aren't gonna understand. And by the end, I like the ending personally, but it's like, I guess
rushed.
He just ended up having it on the back of his card as well. So,
I think the ending is kind of rushed and it all kind of comes together a little too conveniently.
Yeah, it's a little convenient. Let's talk about let's talk about Jessica Rabbit.
I always knew she existed,
and like,
but
yeah,
like that's shocking from Disney of all people.
That Jessica Rabbit is the reason why it's one of the reasons why this movie just hasn't been able to like be anything else. Like, this is why it has no sequels, no TV shows, or anything. She's part of the reason. Even Zemeckis was saying when he was promoting The Witches, I'm pretty sure, and somebody asked him, like, are you ever going to make a sequel? He said one of the reasons why is because Jessica Rabbit just does not fly today. Yeah. You cannot make a character like that.
Because she's a joke of all of the kind of
like you watch the noir. You watch the noir films of the 1940s, and that's the kind of idea. And it's supposed to be heightened in a way, but it's the kind of thing where like, no,
that wouldn't fly anymore.
It just wouldn't. And there's quite. I'll get into one some of the reasons why this movie just
didn't
take off in the way that you think. Because this is a really successful movie and they were pushing for a sequel for like since the very beginning, and there are quite a few reasons why
it just doesn't work. But just quickly finishing on the ending, I think the ending was kind of made to accommodate the children's thing, because in the book the villain isn't Doom, the villain is
Roger,
it's a doppelganger of Roger.
Roger
he planned to frame Eddie for the murder, and then I think both
versions of Roger die.
The real one and the doppelganger both die at the end, like with the getting dipped. But I think it's clearly like, I think the ending was just a little bit rushed to make it feel more like a kid's movie.
Yeah, I mean, like one of the reasons why a lot of people over here showed up, because this is the first time that you see Disney characters with Warner Brothers characters.
Yeah, like that's, and, like, for me, really cool.
This is the only time where they've ever done that. And like, I remember like as a kid seeing Donald and Daffy Duck just being on the pianos dueling out was probably one of the coolest things. That was like, personally, I couldn't care less about Endgame. That was it. That was me seeing all these characters come together was one of the coolest things. And have you seen Ready Player One?
Yeah, I personally love that movie. Very underrated. I think we should cover that. But
no.
It has that kind of vibe to it where it's
yeah, but with Ready Player One, it's like, hey, look, it's Master Chief, and then like oh look, it's the Iron Giant. Oh look, it's just like, oh look, it's King Kong. Oh look, it's the Back to the Future car. Oh my, and it's like,
well,
they don't do anything with it. It's just kind of like stuff is just constantly getting, there's no reason for the Iron Giant really to be there. Oh look, we're in The Shining, because
that's the whole idea of it. The idea is it's like a massive trip through the 80s.
No, but it's like,
in the same way this is a trip through the 40s, that's a trip through the 80s. It's quite hard to explain, but
like, I'm even thinking like Wreck-It Ralph. I think Wreck-It Ralph does it very well, where they have, okay, Ready Player One doesn't have a good enough story to have
I would disagree.
No. I don't care about the characters.
Having read the book, which does it much better.
Really? And there's a sequel to the book.
So the book story is slightly different, and it's less of like, they change the goals for each of the keys. Really? But anyway, we'll cover this if we do it another time.
Yeah, but I just feel it's like, that's how you do cameos wrong. I saw Space Jam: A New Legacy. That is a trash pile of just absolute awfulness. It is capitalism in the movie, because it's just like all this stuff that Warner Brothers just owns, and it's just thrown at you, and they don't do anything with it. Not to mention that it just doesn't have a good story as well. And I feel Who Framed Roger Rabbit has a really good story, and it also has all these characters that you know, and it's just really, is really cool as well.
I think it's good that they don't kind of center it around characters, you know, like,
yes, if they did that,
you're introduced to four or five new animated characters who are all kind of supposed to represent a person in society, and you know, like, I think the movie's, for me, is kind of a missed opportunity. I think ultimately it's a good movie, it's very well handled, but they really missed out on not making it more adult or more like, even a teenager movie would have been funnier, because you'd be able to like really, really use these characters. Like Benny the taxi.
Yeah, he's a cool character.
So much more with him.
Yeah, he kind of comes in. That's one of my issues. He kind of comes in and then he just kind of
dies. Well, not dies, but he just kind of leaves
and then shows up in the ending. And it's like, yeah, this movie is like history. It's just way too long. Like, there's a good video that's like an hour and a half long, just chronologing everything that happened. But there were different directors. Like, I'm seeing here, Terry Gilliam was attached to direct at some point. Then you had, for the part of Eddie, you had Robin Williams, Jack Nicholson, Sylvester Stallone, like so many people. You even had Christopher Lee like attached to be like Judge Doom in this movie. So it took a long production, and the visual effects in this movie
are brilliant. But I imagine they paid more for the actual characters.
Oh yeah, they must.
They must have paid at least like $1 million because for all of the characters.
It was like Warner Brothers said that they're not going to give their characters unless they get to the exact same screen time as all the others. That's why you have Donald and Daffy at the same time, Mickey and Bugs at the same time. Yeah. That's why it ends with Porky Pig, but then Tinkerbell also comes on as well. So it's kind of, they had to like balance that at the same time. And it's, that is genuinely quite interesting. But the visual effects in this movie, because you look at stuff like Mary Poppins and Bedknobs and Broomsticks, and they have got good visual effects, but you don't feel like those characters are there. Those in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, those characters are there. You know, you feel like they're in that world, and that's because of the animation director, Richard Williams. And Richard Williams, he was a very interesting person. You have to go see, like, he was working on a film for 30 years called The Thief and the Cobbler that never got made in the end.
Really?
Yeah. He is a very, very interesting person. And he was all about really polished animation. You watch The Thief and the Cobbler, it's one of like the best, and not best animated films, but best, some of the most fluid animation ever. So it's the kind of thing, like, he was the best person to get for this kind of movie, because he was very all about very good, very clean animation. And it's quite sad what happened to him, how he had his film taken away from him and he never got to finish it. So
but as you were saying about kind of doing like cameos correctly. Yeah. I think one of the best things about this movie is it has the ingredient that a lot of movies that deal with a lot of characters or cameos or like big topics, is it has this kind of indifference where they'll bring in this like ridiculous concept, like having animated people in the same world.
Yeah.
But then they'll just kind of brush over it and not really deal with it too much.
Yeah, it is what it is.
And
it
you just roll with it. And that's something I think Eternal Sunshine does really well, where they're like, you can...
They're weird stuff, but they don't linger on
it. You just go
it.
With it anyway, you know? And like, also, with stuff like... loads of movies do it really well, and they kind of just roll over it, and it's kind of, you know... You do, like, Scott Pilgrim does that as well.
Yeah, there's weird stuff, but it's like...
It's just part of the world.
Well, that's the problem I have with Scott Pilgrim. They never established it from the very beginning.
But they don't really establish anything here, either.
No, it's like, you start the movie with a cartoon... And then, boom, the cartoon is just a set. I don't know how they did that beginning in one take, but it's like, it is what it is. And they already established, this is a world where cartoons live with humans, they're actors, this is it. And I find it really cool that they have a lot of the original actors who played them in the cartoon.
I think it's almost everyone. You know,
Mel Blanc, this was his last performance as the Looney Tunes characters before he died the next year. Mae Questel, the voice of Betty Boop from the 1930s, was still able to come back in the 1980s to do this movie. That is pretty crazy. I can't actually believe that. I don't know how old she was at the time.
Yeah, but she probably, they do reference that. They're like, work's been real slow since cartoons went to color.
Yeah, that is quite interesting. And you can really feel that Nancy Cartwright plays shoe.
They got Frank Sinatra to come in for like a 2 second cameo.
Oh, no, it was actually archival, like...
Yeah, but it's his, like,
I know,
sound.
I know. And Bart Simpson is literally the shoe. Like, the shoe that gets dipped is literally, like, Bart Simpson. That is just... That is really interesting.
They really brought everyone in for this.
Yeah, Richard Williams is Droopy, you know. It is just... It's just really cool how they were able to get so many people back for this.
Because they all love their characters.
I know. And you can feel how much this movie respects the art of animation. This was in that time where Steven Spielberg was getting really interested in animation. It's this quite interesting story. Because after this, he'd do stuff like... Yeah, I almost forgot about that. Like, he'd work with Don Bluth, American Tail, The Land Before Time. Yes, he'd work with Don Bluth. Then he'd make his own, like, animated films. He'd make American Tail 2, A Dinosaur... I can't remember what... A Dinosaur Story or something. Yeah. And, like, it's just... And then he'd do Animaniacs and, like, Tiny Toons Adventures. And this was in that time when he was really interested. Mm-hmm. And I missed that. I miss when he was really interested in doing that. But like, yeah, you can really feel how much everybody respects the art of animation, which is something that I feel has been quite lost.
Yeah, I think we've done, I think the closest we have to kind of that art of animation is the new Spider-Verse movies.
Yes, that's the last time I remember people like, wow, animation can really be something.
Because it's a lot about 3D animation now and just fully CGI movies.
And it's so cool to see this really polished 2D animation. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people credit Who Framed Roger Rabbit for bringing back animation. Because after this, you have Who Framed Roger Rabbit, then Disney gets reinvigorated again, they start their renaissance, they have Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, The Lion King, Aladdin, so, and then, like, all these studios come out, then, like, you had a lot of animated series come out, The Simpsons comes out the next year, then you had, you know, the Batman series as well, so this movie was, a lot of people consider this, like, the start of, like, the new animation, just renaissance of the 90s and stuff, and you can see in the Academy Awards, this won 4 Academy Awards.
Oh, really?
Yeah, best film editing, best visual effects, best sound editing, and a special achievement award for Richard Williams. With this many, I would have thought it would get a best picture nomination, but...
I guess animation's not as good.
Yeah, I feel like it couldn't be a best picture.
Oh, okay, let me see what best...
Because it was Rain Man that year that won.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, because I want to see all the nominees, because I can't remember 1988.
I don't think it could ever win, because it's just, like, ridiculous, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but...
It's like if Scott Pilgrim won.
Yeah, but so was Everything Everywhere All at Once. So,
that's quite well done, like, sci-fi. Just...
Yeah, but it still was kind of crazy.
But it's a kid's movie with adult concepts. I think if it had been an adult's movie with a kid's animation style, it could have got that Oscar.
But it couldn't... Yeah, okay, Rain Man 1, Working Girl, Mississippi Bunny. I have not heard of most of the list of Best Picture nominations here. But, like, yeah, you're probably right. They could have... In the time that this was made, they could not have gone further with this movie.
But I think they definitely... Because there were, at the times, like, R-rated cartoons.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the works by Ralph Bakshi. He made Fritz the Cat and the Hobbit movies.
They were all at, like, the same time.
Cool World and movies like that. But
really,
yeah, those were... those were independent films. Disney at the time... But this was during when Disney was trying to reinvent itself. Mm-hmm. They made Turner and Hooch at this time, and... you know, that's when they formed Touchstone. And they were trying all these different things. They were trying Tron, and that's why they did all these kind of things. So this was as far as they really could have gone. So,
Yeah, but I think this was around the same... Well, it was before, actually. He didn't make Ralph... As you were saying, Ralph Bakshi.
Yeah.
He made movies before that were a bit more...
Yeah,
and
it's really cool when you get things like this. Like, I have not seen the Lord of the Rings, his one. Apparently, he does 2 of the books and doesn't finish one.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I think he does 1 book, doesn't finish the second, and he never. The movie made money, but he never decided to, like, make another one.
Someone else did it in Canada eventually.
Really?
Yeah,
so I don't know about that. Now, we have to talk about, like, how this movie just... People still talk about this movie, yeah, but it's like, it doesn't really live on. It never had anything else come after this. And the reason for that is kind of because, this movie was made by Amblin Animation and touched at Amblin Animation and the kind of Richard Williams and, oh my God, 4%, jeez, wow. Yeah, so, is it that bad? Oh God.
I've never seen it.
In fact, they compare the woman in that to Jessica Rabbit. That's all I've ever heard.
Yeah, she's more of a Marilyn Monroe in Cool World.
Yeah, like, if you watch Cool World, that's Who Framed Roger Rabbit, but it feels more adult. If you might want to see that if you want to see a more adult version of Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
I don't know. I'll think about it.
Yeah.
It looks pretty bad, but it's called Rabbit, and yeah.
I know. And so basically, after this movie, they were like, okay... This was the second highest grossing movie. This is the highest grossing movie we have ever made at this studio. Let's make another one. But it was kind of a hard thing because it was Amblin Animation and Walt Disney Pictures as well. Mm. So what they did was make a few short films. I can only remember there was Trolley Trouble, Trail Mix Up, and I can't remember the last one. One of them was shown with Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Yeah, they had lots of ideas for Roger Rabbit films, and they were like, One of them was where Roger Rabbit, the one that they thought they were going to do was where Roger Rabbit goes, is who discovered Roger Rabbit, where Roger Rabbit serves in World War II, and that's where he meets Jessica Rabbit. And they were like, okay, yeah, this is be good. And then Spielberg does Schindler's List, and he's like, oh, shoot, Nazis are no joke. Mm. And this was like, and he'd already done Last Crusade and Raiders of the Lost Ark, where he was like, yeah, Nazis are kind of funny. Yeah, look how stupid they are and stuff. And then after this, he was like, Nazis are no joke. I don't want to make a film that's just not taking Nazis seriously. Yeah. So that's when they were like, yeah. So that's, he was like, yeah, we're not doing this. We're not making a sequel. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of it for a while. Then in the late 90s, they were going to make this CG kind of hybrid. There's, you can probably find a video. Yeah. There's a 30-second video of a test that they did of a Roger Rabbit 2 CGI. Mm. It looks kind of good. Mm. Like, yeah, it's quite something. So this was the pitch test that they had in, done by Eric Goldberg, who was a Disney legend.
Yeah, but I think the whole point of Roger Rabbit is that he's this kind of 2D animated character.
Yeah, but I don't really know what this is.
Making him 3D kind
of... But it's not really 3D.
But that's so fluid.
It is. Yeah, it looks really, really good. And I can't remember what happened. They just decided not to do that. Mm. And so that was one of the reasons why they haven't done one. So, like, yeah, so I'm reading here, like, Spielberg left the project when deciding not to satirize Nazis after directing Schindler's List. Which is completely understandable, which, like, I understand. And it was supposed to be a musical. That one of the songs, there is, you can hear one of the songs that they actually made for it. And
I do think now, considering, like, things like A24 are around, I feel like we could, we've touched on A24 before as the, like, major kind of where ideas come from place. Because stuff like I Saw the TV Glow exists. Yeah. Stuff like Midsummer exists. I feel like it would be interesting to see, because there's a lot of things where they kind of take the like perceived adultness of the Looney Tunes, where there's this kind of almost adult element to it with these like gruff voice babies and stuff. I think it would be possible now to just go all out and make like a fully developed Roger Rabbit 2, which is, you know, like Roger Rabbit gets into some trouble with the police or something, and
but
his wife
the kind
has to bail him up.
I don't think you ask anybody younger than 14, and they will ask you. And if you ask them who Roger Rabbit is, they will stare at you like they don't even know what you're talking about. Roger Rabbit is not a popular enough character for Disney to go, yes, let's make a sequel.
It's a cult legend kind
of thing. I mean, like, it's not cult enough, like a Tron, to make another one. Mm. You know, it's not one of those movies where, like, and, like, you have stuff like Jessica Rabbit in it, and it's like, no, they will never. Yeah. It's with the Me Too movement and stuff, and, like, the sexualization. This movie will just never work. So that's why Disney still celebrates Roger Rabbit. It's not like they don't. It's not like they ignore that it exists.
It's not like it's not like Meet the Robinsons, which is arguably Disney's best movie that they just kind of ignore that they made.
Love Meet the Robinsons.
Yeah, I love that. And especially using Simon and Garfunkel in a Disney movie.
I know.
It's like amazing. But for
we have
reason,
to do Meet the Robinsons one day, because it is one of the most underrated films I have ever seen in my life.
They just ignore that it exists.
I know. And Disney does that with a lot of their movies. They did that to The Black Hole.
It's actually brilliant.
They've done that to The Black Hole. They've done that with The Black Cauldron. A lot of these movies from the 1980s, like Return to Oz, all these dark movies they've tried to just bury. Flight of the Navigator, we never did that. Yeah. Don't worry, we didn't, you know. It's quite interesting to see how Disney never talks about what they did in the 1980s. Yeah. The Black Hole, I was watching a video about it. It's quite interesting because they were trying so hard to be Star Wars. So hard. Yeah, yeah. And it's like they bury them. They're like, yeah, we did. And they were in a lot of trouble during the 70s and 80s because Walt Disney dies and they have no clue what to do. So they just throw a bunch of stuff at the wall and just trying for something to stick. Roger Rabbit was the first time something properly stick. I mean, he had stuff like Splash and Three Men and a Baby, which was all their live action movies. And then in 1989, they have The Little Mermaid, which is the first time that... that's the first time where something just sticks for them.
And but I think Disney never really, like... Disney doesn't appreciate them, but pulp culture does. Like, especially Flight of the Navigator.
Have you seen it? I haven't seen it,
but there's a song on an album by Childish Gambino called Flight of the Navigator,
really?
Which is part of like a whole alien theory thing.
I think it's directed by Joe Dante. Am I wrong?
Randall Kleiser.
Yeah, I can't remember which one it was.
Oh, he did Grease.
So
The Blue Lagoon.
So it's just like...
Oh, and he did Honey, I Blew Up the Kids.
You know, it's just everything in the 80s, they were like, we never did. I think they kind of talk about The Fox and the Hound, and but it's like Roger Rabbit is the first one was like, hey, we can still do it. Because in the 1980s, people were like, Disney's not cool.
Yeah, like, Disney, for example, The Rescuers.
I like The Rescuers.
Yeah,
personally.
They just don't exist. Like, they don't appreciate it.
Nobody talks about The Rescuers.
Bolt.
Have you seen Oliver and Company?
I haven't seen it, no.
Another 80s film that actually came out the same year.
Dude, Bolt, Brother Bear, they just kind of ignore
the
Yeah,
when
made,
a movie
like,
doesn't make money,
sequels.
They're like, yeah, The Great Mouse Detective came out 2 years before.
Great Mouse Detective is
one of the most underrated films
they
have ever made.
It's arguably one of Disney's greatest movies.
I know, so it's like, Roger Rabbit isn't popular enough to be like a Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin, where it's like, yeah, we can remake that. Yeah, that's fine, let's do that again. But it's not unpopular enough like a Great Mouse Detective or Oliver and Company or Black Cauldron, where they're like, yeah, let's just stay away from that. It's in this really weird space where they just have no clue what to do with it. Zemeckis doesn't really want to do it. Bob Hoskins has sadly passed on now. Nobody is really here to do it. Nobody really wants to see it. So, you know, it's kind of stuck in this place where it's like, yeah, we'll talk about it. It's, you know, it's not really something that we do. Richard Williams has passed on in 2019. He made a quite good short before he died with Kobe Bryant, actually.
Oh, what's it called?
It is called, oh God, I'd have, wait, no, that wasn't him. That was Glenn Keane. Sorry. That was Glenn Keane.
Yeah, I know that one. It won an Oscar, the Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, that one is quite good. Dear Basketball.
Yep. That's it. Very good. And the animation on that is really nice.
I know, but Richard Williams, the only reason he did this movie was so he can fund The Thief and the Cobbler, which in the end, it's a really long story I can't get into here,
it is out.
It's unfinished. There's a recobbled cut which is taking bits of it and trying to put it together again.
It's on YouTube, you can watch it. The Thief and the Cobbler recobbled cut.
I know, and it's like, he was making this movie since the early 60s and it came out in the early 90s.
It's got Matthew Broderick in it as Tack the Cobbler.
It's really confusing because the movie gets taken away from him and then Disney starts coming out with all these musicals and stuff, and they're like, hey, let's make it a musical. Let's get all these celebrities in it. Let's get Matthew Broderick and stuff like that.
But what actually is it about?
It's not gonna lie, it's Aladdin.
Yeah, the genie looks like Aladdin.
Yeah.
And then
Vincent Price plays the bad guy, which Vincent Price is incredible in anything, so you know. But it's like, it's Aladdin, and it came out the same year as Aladdin. So when people saw this movie, they were like, oh, you copied Aladdin. That is poor. That is very poor.
Not too much. A thief and a shoemaker, princess and a shoemaker unite to save Baghdad by restoring three gold bulls. If I'm honest, it sounds like a D&D storyline.
No, because like you watch it, you have the Sultan who looks just like the Sultan in Aladdin. The Grand Vizier is this exact same title that Jafar has in Aladdin as well. And he's also the bad guy as well. So people come out and it's like, oh, that's the exact same thing. And Richard Williams never talks about the movie ever again because he never works in Hollywood ever again since there. He writes a really good book, The Animator's Survival Kit, which is like, that's what every animator looks at when making when trying to learn how to anime. But he never went back to like Hollywood. I think that was the last time he ever did anything there. And you know, it's quite sad what happened to him. But you know, so he was an incredible animator. He was an incredible animator at the time.
But we've kind of gone on a massive tangent.
Yeah.
So, wait,
I gotta say something. Like, you know, I think at Disneyland, there's this ride called Roger Rabbit's Cartoon Spin. And if you want proof that Disney doesn't know what to do with Roger Rabbit, it's how they took the model of Jessica Rabbit from that ride, put a trench coat on her to cover her up. So it's the kind of thing where they're like, yeah, you can see a picture. They are like, yeah.
They do not know what to do
no,
with this guy.
We have no clue what to do with this. Okay, let's just leave it alone. Yeah. You know, it's just...
It's a shame, because there's a lot of potential
behind
it.
There's a lot of potential, and I don't think...
I think this is an example of where a studio kind of comes in and ruins a movie. Yeah. And that's happened a lot with kind of like it's more prevalent in comics and Marvel movies and stuff like that, where they hire a really talented director and then they kind of come in and they let him do whatever he wants. And I reckon Roger Rabbit was a very adult movie, and then Disney comes in and is like, you can't do that.
Yeah, they were gonna shelve this movie. Yeah, not only because it was going over budget, way too many special effects, and they were like, we can't show this thing to kids.
Yeah, so
that's why it's a touchstone.
They've come in and they've kind of cut as much of it as possible.
I know, and I understand what you're saying, and like,
but I do think it, because I feel like if it was aimed as a kids' movie, a lot of the characters in this film wouldn't exist. Oh, no. So I think it was originally going to be an adult.
I know, but the fact that this is a PG, like PG, doesn't mean anything nowadays. Mm. PG means, I think, stuff like Inside Out 2 is getting a PG. Back then, PG meant something. That was like Return to Oz. Yeah, Temple of Doom, it created the PG-13. Gremlins was a PG-13. This movie, I think, was a PG-13 as well. So this meant that, like, oh God, this isn't a kids movie. You know, we need to. This is not good. So I understand what you're saying. They had to kind of scale it back.
So 1988 was originally filled with racy and off-color gags. Many were censored over the time, and so characters like Jessica Rabbit would basically, because in the film she's quite a boring, like,
I find her quite interesting.
No, she's quite interesting, but she was going to be a lot more, and she was going to do a lot more, like, to do with her character. But then
she had a lot more character in the actual book.
They kind of just cut it all out. Yeah. And, like, yeah, so the book is, if you want that from Roger Rabbit, it's kind of everything that Roger Rabbit couldn't be. To kind of finish on Who Framed Roger Rabbit, we went on a bit of a spiel, but, you know, it was enjoyable. So, what is our ranking for this film?
Personally, it is one of the most imaginative, interesting, creative films I've seen in a long time. And I'm not even sad that they're not even making another one, because this movie is good as it is and I don't need them to spoil it. So it's a 5 for me.
I think, so I've only seen it once. And for me, what you just described is Scott Pilgrim, which we did last time. But I think it is very inventive. It is very creative. I think I need to go and watch it again at some point. Yeah. I think it will benefit from rewatches and making it more comfort.
I know.
I think for me, it's kind of a 3.5 to a low 4.
But it's inspired so many movies like Ready Player One and like Space Jam as
well. I think it's, don't get me wrong, it's very good. I'm going to go with 3.5 to a low 4, personally.
Fine. But like, this movie genuinely brought animation back to being something people actually care about. This movie, along with The Little Mermaid, brought back animation to being cool again. It didn't last for a long time, but like, for a time, animation actually came back, which is just like, it's one of the most important movies in the history of animation. So it is a 5 for me, because I care so much about animation, and this is also a great movie. One of, if not the best Zemeckis movies. I've only seen Back to the Future 1, 2, and Forrest Gump, but it could be. It really could be.
I think Forrest Gump is his best.
Yeah, we should do Forrest Gump.
So, thank you for listening.
Yeah, we're 4.5.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Yeah. We're going for a 4 as a group, right. I think, because it balances out. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. If you don't even like animation, watch it for how ridiculous this movie is.
It could get you into animation. It could get you into the past, like animation's golden age of the 1940s, 50s, all those Warner Brothers, you know, MGM and stuff like that. So, if you watch this, you might want to go back and, you know, go see all those old cartoons again, because, you know, they are really interesting, and this is the only movie I've ever seen that properly gives them the respect they deserve. So, yeah.
So, thanks for listening. I've been Edward.
I've been Noah. And yeah.